Namaham Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatayane Hare Krishna. Chanting around? Just giving hand in a big way. That's what the Radha Kund people do. They always have their hand in the bimba. They make a show of chanting lots of rounds. But just their hand is there. Not much sound ever comes out. No, is it? All right, we see people in various dress styles. Usually the Asapuja Devi want to speak somewhat intimately about Srila Prabhupada, which might not be very suitable for those who are newcomers. Yes, Vyasa Puja Day, as I was saying, the Vyasa Puja is complete, the ceremony is complete, but we could take the opportunity to go on speaking about Srila Prabhupada. What shall we speak about Srila Prabhupada? We find that Sally Agarwal, who Srila Prabhupada stayed with in what was the name of that city? Butler, Pennsylvania. She, although she never took to Krishna consciousness seriously in this lifetime, she described Srila Prabhupada as oceanic. So, how will we describe Srila Prabhupada? We can attempt to do so as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in describing the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Every moment of his pastimes are like a great ocean, and in he states that the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita is just like, he's just presented one drop. It's inconceivable. The Supreme Lord, his qualities are inconceivable. The qualities of pure devotee of Krishna are inconceivable. And although some may say it's just, when we say that, well, we feel that Srila Prabhupada, even among pure devotees, is very great. He's not an ordinary pure devotee. What does that mean? That no pure devotee is ordinary. Pure devotees means that they are extraordinary. But he was no ordinary pure devotee. Unique, his mercy is still very much apparent in the world. For instance, what is the evidence of Srila Prabhupada's mercy? Well, the fact that we're all here today, sitting here to hear about Srila Prabhupada. He came to glorify Krishna. And we gradually realize that he should be glorified even more than Krishna, according to Krishna's own instructions. Madhakta puja bhadika, when Krishna instructs Uddhava on the method of worship of Krishna. Jivesarup hoy Krishna nitadas. Every living being is meant to serve Krishna. So the formal system of doing so is described by Lord Krishna to Uddhava. And among all the different procedures that he mentions, he says that worship of my devotee should be done even more than worship of myself. So there's, as I was saying, Srila Prabhupada is oceanic. We are, well, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes himself as just being like a sparrow was can take a little chuni, what is it? Tuni. Sparrow. He can how much water can a sparrow take in his beak? Just a little drop. So now I'm gonna make a statement which may sound like humility, but you may understand that it's completely true. I'm obviously not anywhere near the capacity of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and he's a great acharya, and he feels himself like a sparrow when he's confronted with the task of describing the qualities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, how much less capable then are we of describing the qualities of Prabhupada, whose qualities are not less than those of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyway, I'm going to focus today on that might be considered an encouraging lead-in. I'm now going to speak on a somewhat polemic subject. Somewhat. I'm not going to go full blast. Maybe. Let's see. I'll try and keep it somewhat balanced. In the spirit of the times. The eclectic or egalitarian spirit of the times. It's somewhat polemic, but let's investigate this topic of the human Prabhupada. What does that mean? Well, Srila Prabhupada was a human being. Was he or wasn't he? Well, he had a passport which said that he was born in 1896 in Calcutta, an Indian passport. You can still see the last of his passports. It's preserved there in Vrindavan. So he was classified as a human being. Of course, where it stated his father's name, and I don't know up to the present day, but probably still is, but in Indian passports, you have to state your father's name also. That's part of Indian culture, because you see, in the West, everyone's an individual, but in India, you're identified by your father, and then your caste, and so many things. The group is considered more important than the individual. The family is considered more important. So where the father's name, Srila Prabhupada, he put for his father's name, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So is he a human or isn't he a human? Well, in one sense, you can say yes. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't come like some ghostly form. He appeared in what appeared to be flesh and blood. He was born on a certain date, in a certain place, and his body, the six Sharavikar, his body apparently went through the six transformations of birth, growth, remaining for some time, then production of byproducts, dwindling, and death. Apparently all these things were perceived in relationship to Srila Prabhupada. Of course, we find also in Lord Krishna's instructions to Uddhava the important statement for how we should see a guru. Acharyam maam vijani yandavamandita karyachitna marcha buddhya suyeta sarva deva mayo guru. He states then. Now this is a statement about the acharya. How should the acharya be seen? Lord Krishna says the acharya should be seen as me. The guru is God, or as Srila Prabhupada qualified that statement, as good as God. Not him in all respects, but Lord Krishna himself states the guru is me. So the guru is one manifestation of Krishna. Not non-different from Krishna in all respects, but one should see the Guru as Krishna. Krishna has come to me in this form. Acharya Navamanya, one should not in any way disrespect him. We should not consider him an ordinary human being subject to death. Namartya Buddha. So one should not be envious of him. Saying, who the hell is that guy sitting there? All that worship and honor and tells me what to do and expects me to follow it. Who the hell is he anyway? Suyata. Namartya Buddha Suyata. Sarvadeva Maya Guru. He's the representative of all the demigods, or rather, whatever all the demigods put together can do, they can't do what Srila Prabhupada can do for us, which is to give us Krishna, at least in the way that Srila Prabhupada gave us. So this is the injunction. Interestingly, this description of the Acharya, he's to be accepted as good as Krishna, is given by Lord Krishna in his description to Uddhava of the Brahmachari. And it refers to which kind of Acharya? The one who goes out all over the world and makes lots of disciples. Of course, Srila Prabhupada was in that category. Not many are. But this specific type of guru that was being referred to by Krishna in this description was the typical forest guru who lived in the forest usually with his wife, and would have disciples, brahmacharis, young boys, starting off a young boy, just like that, gurukul. Gurukul doesn't mean a big building with registration, permission from the government, tax exemption. Gurukul meant in the forest. Guru is living, a little hut, there's a few little huts, a few brahmacharis like that. Very simple. Maybe not a very famous guru, but to be considered as good as God. And that has been there in Indian culture up to the present day. Unfortunately, that's being exploited by all kinds of rascals posing as gurus to mislead people. But the culture of accepting the guru as good as God is still there. We still find that, even to the extent that someone who's driving a truck and then he gets a helper, a young boy becomes his helper, he doesn't do much to help. He's more or less like a disciple. He's getting trained in all the things to do driving a truck. And the truck driver is respected like a guru. He taught me everything that I need for my truck driving life. So in all respects, those who are teachers. Of course, nowadays, everything is changing. The steamroller of Western anti-civilization is crushing everything of any real value in this world. Everything about this Western culture is disgusting. So, anyway, the point here is that the guru is not to be considered as an ordinary human being. Nevertheless, many people were impressed by Srila Prabhupada for what they perceived as his human-like qualities, because someone who is in that position of being worshipped as good as God, well, it's easy for it to go to your head, as the saying may be, as the English saying. Srila Prabhupada used to use the term puffed up. Yesterday, I think it was, I was talking about one. There's some things in your life which you just don't forget. And one of the things I didn't forget was many years ago, it must have been almost 20 years ago, at a holy place in India, I mean, it wasn't a very major incident. It wasn't like, you know, like someone was throwing bombs or anything. It was a kind of relatively minor incident, but it stuck in my mind. I was at a holy place, and a guru arrived, a huge, fat Mayavadi, on a palanquin. And he was being carried by, obviously, village people who are quite poor and not very educated. There are about 30 of them. And they're all jumping around him very excitedly, chanting his name, Swami, whatever it may be. They were chanting something around that. I don't know. It's probably, I can't remember. Maybe it was in Telugu. This was in Andhra Pradesh. And the guru was sitting there like this, with this look of, I mean, it's just like the personification of everything a Vaishnava shouldn't be. Just extremely puffed up because he was being carried on a palanquin by a handful of low class, let's say it. In these Western countries, you're not supposed to say that word, but it's a common term in India. Now they're trying to eradicate that term also. But low class people. And he was just the look on his face and the whole aura extremely puffed up. And Srila Prabhupada, he was quite just naturally not affected by any worship or any. He asserted his position to his disciples. Often, Srila Prabhupada was very strong. He was very heavy. We'll get back to that a little later. But, there are so many instances. Just like, for instance, Srila Prabhupada, he met with John Lennon, Yoko Ono, and George Harrison. Probably you've all heard their names, although they're like all great persons of this world, as in. As time goes on, they're in the process of being forgotten. And many young people today, 15 years old, they may not have. I think there was a recent wave of repopularity, something like that. So it may be they've heard of them. Anyway, they were phenomenally popular and influential in the early 1970s when Srila Prabhupada met with them. And most people would faint at even having the opportunity to see them, what to speak of, sit and talk to them. But Prabhupada wasn't. He dealt with them like he dealt with all other people, especially young people in the West. He dealt with them as he dealt with any such people. He treated them as bewildered spirit souls who haven't got a clue what the purpose of life is. And Srila Prabhupada spoke as the authority, as the representative of Vyas, as the representative of Krishna. He immediately took the position of an instructor. And toward the end of the conversation, he said, so you'll become very great, very famous, but not great, I don't think he said the word great. You become popular. So now you use this popularity to spread Krishna consciousness. He wasn't affected by the prospect of meeting with them, nor did he even want his disciples to publicize it, that once they made a flyer stating that I said something good. Now you're going to test me and see if I get puffed up.
Before, you rascal.
Okay, alright, I have to pretend to be humble. Speaking in a very soft voice. The Prabhupada wasn't like that. He didn't speak in a soft voice. He was humble, but strong also. So that's just one example of many. Also, Shyamasundar Prabhu, one of his disciples, one of the three disciples who Srila Prabhupada called Shyamasundar. And there's another one called Shyamasundar Ananda. So anyway, the most famous of them, he described how once he was doing some gem business, and he brought in to Prabhupada some necklace which was worth like a few hundred thousand pounds. He put it on Prabhupada. Prabhupada wore it for some time. They were just talking. Prabhupada took it off and said, sell it and use the money for Krishna. He wasn't affected by anything of this world. So, many people who understood some of the implications of Srila Prabhupada being a guru, being the head of a big international organization, were struck at how natural and human he could be in his behavior. This is stated in a not in a demeaning manner, but an appreciative manner. Thomas Hopkins, who was a scholar of some sorts, I don't know if he's still alive. Is he still alive? I don't know. I didn't hear that he died. Thomas Hopkins first met Srila Prabhupada in 1967, which was before Srila Prabhupada had become very famous, but at least in New York and in, I'm not sure if he'd been to San Francisco by that time, but anyway, he was something. It started to be recognized at least by a few people. So Thomas Hopkins wrote in his foreword to one of the volumes of Prabhupada's biography, the Prabhupada Lilamrita. Thomas Hopkins wrote of the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita as a very human story, with a very human Bhaktivedanta Swami at the center. Because especially the first volumes of the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, there's more detail. Later on it becomes more condensed. But in the beginning there's more detail. And I believe it was Satsuru Maharaj also described what he perceived as three phases of Prabhupada's preaching Leela. He said the beginning, the middle, and the latest stage, which corresponds to the development of ISKCON. I'd maybe add one more to that, and that was the first months in Butler and New York before he had any followers. But Satsuru Maharaj, he classified that as the early days, the very early days. And then what now in retrospect we can see as the intermediate era chronologically, when ISKCON was expanded. In the beginning, there was the storefront in New York and then San Francisco. So there were two centers. That was like the beginning stages. And then there was Montreal. And then after that, there started to be... Many centers started to expand. And then at some later... Probably the next change came with the change from the prime preaching method being Harinam Sankirtan to book distribution. And then ISKCON became very widely spread all over the world, not just in America, but all over the world. And it became like a corporate status, as lots of money flowing in, big centers being established, and Prabhupada would meet with big people of the world, like that. So there were three phases. But and Prabhupada's manner of conducting himself, you could say, is somewhat different in those different phases. It's like in the early days of ISKCON, Mukunda Maharaj describes that when he first went to see Srila Prabhupada, he said that usually before, when he'd been to see so many big people, he was in the music business arranging gigs and all this kind of thing. So he said, you meet these big stars and they never have time to speak to you. But with Prabhupada, with Swamiji at the time, as he was known, when he met him, Mukunda himself, Michael Grant at the time, ran out of words. And Swamiji had all the time in the world for him. So it was like that. Prabhupada gave his time liberally in the very early days, and he There are descriptions. One time with his disciples in Boston in the early days, I read it somewhere, maybe one of those Sensory Marja wrote many books about those early days especially. So he describes how they went into a long conversation, Prabhupada and his disciples, over the relative benefits of traveling by bus or by train. So like that, Prabhupada spent a lot of time with his disciples, and he knew each one of them intimately. There weren't so many of them. And he was shaping them and molding them, and they gradually shaped and molded others who came. And by the time I somehow or other landed up in the doors of ISKCON in 1975, there was no... You didn't see Prabhupada. I mean, he wasn't there. He was somewhere else in the world, and he came a few months after I joined, and he only came to London for 2 days, and hundreds of devotees came on from all over Europe, and no one told me, but it was just obvious that there's no question of just like walking up to Prabhupada and having a long conversation with him or saying anything for that matter. Just you saw him in the classes and the darshans Prabhupada gave also in his room. They were open darshans, and that was it. You weren't even supposed to go on the morning walk, although I did. I was told not to by my town president, but I went anyway. But there were so many, devotees that I couldn't hear anything. Prabhupada didn't talk much that morning. I was at the back trying not to be seen by the town president. And the only thing I remember is that some Prabhupada stopped once and told the devotee not to step on him. The devotee kept on stepping on his Prabhupada. Otherwise, Prabhupada didn't say much. Obviously, that in the later days, Srila Prabhupada is more like a regal figure to most of his disciples. I remember also in that in London when Prabhupada was there, Bhaktivedanta Manor. It's in some ways similar to this temple room, the same wooden floor, but quite a bit bigger. And the temple room was packed with devotees, and kirtan was going on. Srila Prabhupada came in, and it stopped when Prabhupada came. Everyone was quiet, and everyone bowed down. So it's a very thick mood of awe and reverence for Srila Prabhupada. But in the early days, it wasn't like that. The devotees, they didn't know anything of the etiquette of dealing with a guru. And Srila Prabhupada reciprocated with it. I mean, he would preach clearly and strongly, especially when he was giving lectures. But in this is what we gather from the early days descriptions, he would always instruct, but he would be very open and he'd discuss with people. And, human. What Thomas Hopkins calls human. He didn't demand respect. He didn't say, "Look here, folks, I'm a representative of Krishna. Bow down, mister." He didn't say that. No. By 1968, there's a lecture in Seattle at the end. You can hear that someone says, "I don't see why I should bow down to anyone." And Prabhupada says, "You don't want to bow down, you will be forced to bow down. If you don't bow down to Krishna, then you will be forced to bow down by birth, death, old age, and disease." So, Satsarup Maharaj and others have emphasized this human quality. Because Satsarup Maharaj remembers, joined in those very early days, and he remembers the Swamiji. And it seems that in some ways, Satsarup Maharaj, from his writings, it seems he was always hankering after those early days when there was a very intimate relationship with Prabhupada. And later on, it seems he felt a little alienated by the whole competitive mood and the almost like corporate status that ISKCON inevitably assumed. Srila Sahasrara Maharaj liked his Prabhupada simple. He always was simple. Please turn around a little bit. Yeah. Remember, who's there? So, what is this humanness of Srila Prabhupada? How should we see him? Well, the humanness of Srila Prabhupada, that Sahasrara Maharaj in his dealings with Prabhupada in the early days, he knew Srila Prabhupada as a person, whereas we, to a large extent, know him as a principle, you could say. We understand the Shastra descriptions. And we pray to Srila Prabhupada and we feel his reciprocation in our lives, but we don't know him in the same way that others who are very intimately related with him were. It doesn't mean that we are any less eligible to get his mercy. In some ways we may be more eligible, because as the saying goes, and practically it's seen, familiarity breeds contempt. The Shastra description is of the Guru is more important than the subjective experience of him. In other words, what Krishna says, the Guru is as good as me, that is more important. It's more important to understand Srila Prabhupada through this description than through our personal subjective understanding of him, as Srila Prabhupada himself pointed out. Everything is to be understood through Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, obviously, he wasn't just a principle, like somebody, label it, put it in a bottle, write a little description, sulfuric acid, 15% or something like this. He wasn't a quantifiable entity. As Shyamasundar, the one I was talking about, also said that it was always an experience going to see Srila Prabhupada, because you could never, it was so unpredictable. That seems to be one of the qualities of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also. They'd always say all these unpredictable things. You couldn't imagine what the kind of things that say or do would just turn your whole perspective upside down. So, well, which is more important? In purely philosophical or Shastric terms, the Shastric description is more important, but it seems for those devotees who had what you might call an intimate personal relationship with him, I mean, a direct personal relationship. It's difficult to say, because it's not that those who didn't have that kind of relationship, like Shyamasundara, Mukunda, and Satsaru, it's not that we don't have a direct relationship, it's not indirect. But those, we can say, who personally associated with him in his manifest pastimes, so they like to remember Prabhupada as they knew him. So which is more important? Well, they're non-different. Prahlad Maharaj states that you, Nrisimhadev, have sent me in the world to manifest the qualities of a pure devotee. In other words, the Shastric descriptions are there, but they're manifest for us to perceive in the person of Srila Prabhupada. Harishori Prabhu, who also had intimate relationship with Prabhupada in the sense that he was a servant, and Prabhupada liked him. What about that? What do you think of that statement? Prabhupada liked Harishori. Does that mean he didn't like others? Well, it might seem like that. Again, subjectively speaking, it seemed that Prabhupada liked some more than others. He dealt with devotees in different ways, and it seemed he had a very natural relationship with Harishori Prabhu. as with others, like, well, I don't want to mention names, but with someone else, he was, it seemed like Prabhupada was always very heavy with him. And with others, they felt they didn't want to enter into it. They felt a little cautious about being so naturally dealing with Prabhupada. But Harishchandra Prabhu was very respectful to Prabhupada, at the same time, obviously very intimate, and he's given a seminar, Srila Prabhupada, the person Bhagavat, because he sees Srila Prabhupada obviously had a very personal relationship with him, but at the same time he sees the Srimad Bhagavatam manifest in the very personality of Srila Prabhupada. He didn't, just like we see many devotees, they relate to Srila Prabhupada as my father. Mukunda Maharaj wrote, he's my father, my friend. So I see him like that, but we should see that, but at the same time not be too sentimental about it. He's my father, yes, but how relate that to the philosophy and the life of Krishna consciousness that he taught us. You know, we may, and I don't want to get too much into psychology like this, but people may have been feeling a lacking, they didn't have a very good relationship with their father, and they found Prabhupada just like the best father. But it's Srila Prabhupada, his position at the same time, although we may feel like that, he is, after all, guru who teaches the science of Krishna consciousness. So, Srila Prabhupada, yes, he's a person. He's not just a principle. He's not the stereotyped, give a Bhagavatam class, walk out, do the... Actually, Prabhupada was very regulated in his activities, but not stereotyped. Like Krishna is always fresh and natural and unpredictable, in some ways unpredictable. You know, Krishna, one of the qualities of Krishna is that he has contradictory qualities. So he's, in one sense, always the same. He has the same pastimes over and over again. And he has the same girlfriend and the same, eats the same kind of foods, but then again within the food but nitya nutana, yesterday we were reading that, he's ever fresh. So within, I guess you could say, like a matrix, which define Krishna's always Satchidananda, he's always Ishvara Paramakrishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadi Radhi Govinda, Sarvakarana Karana, and all the prayers of the Brahma Samhita exactly describe Krishna. But within that description, he's also the most relishable person. And one of the things about being a relishable person is that he's ever fresh. So Srila Prabhupada also human in one sense. In one sense, if we say that the human Prabhupada, it's not demeaning, it's an affectionate description or an appreciation of certain qualities of Srila Prabhupada. We say, well, that's exactly why that is the specific gift of Vaishnavism, especially Gauriya Vaishnavism, seeing Krishna himself as human, human-like. Human-like would be a more accurate description, because Krishna, even though he is so great, but he is also very natural and not going around telling everyone, I'm God, I'm the Supreme Lord, obey me, do what I say. He does that in Bhagavad Gita, but not in Vrindavan. And even not generally in his dealings with Arjuna, only for the amount of time he told him to speak. And even then he didn't say, I'm God, obey me. He said, I'm God, surrender to me. Mame kam sharanam. Vishwanath Chakravarti says that. And Krishna says, no, not that way. Devi yesha gunamahima maya durati. Mame vaye prapadyante. When Krishna says, you surrender to me, and Vishwanath Chakravarti says, and Krishna's pointing at his chest vigorously,
You surrender to me.
Prabhupada also, now getting... Well, this is an example of the human Prabhupada. So there's a description by Hayagriva, one of Srila Prabhupada's earliest disciples. Hayagriva, who was Howard, Wally, who later became Umapati, and Keith, who later became Kirtanananda, were living in an apartment in Mott Street, which is close to 26 Second Avenue, where Swamiji had his storefront. And they would come and listen to the lectures. And they would go back and they would compare it to all the impersonal nonsense that they had been cultivating along with various kinds of intoxication. And they were reading from Dr. Radhakrishnan's translation of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. One of the many editions of Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. So, Prabhupada was one time criticizing his daughter. He says, you see what a rascal he is? They're reading the verse. Mammanabhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru mame vaishasi satyante mame vaishasi yuktvayavam atmanam matparayana. In the purport to this, or in the anti-purport, or the whatever you want to call it, the non-purport by Dr. Radhakrishnan, he says, it is not to Krishna. Prabhupada's paraphrasing when he says this. It's not exactly the words used by the rascal Mayavadi. But he says, it's not unto the person Krishna, but to the unborn eternal within. And then... yeah, Prabhupada said that, just see what a fool and a rascal he is. Krishna's saying to me, and he's saying to something else. And then Keith stood up and said, well, actually, you know, it's not so bad what he said. And Keith gave so many citations from Shankaracharya and Tao and so many, all this, all kinds of impersonalists. Swamiji sat and listened. He said, have you finished? And then Keith thought of some more things to say, and he went on. And again, Swamiji, have you finished? And again, he went on. And then when he'd finished, Prabhupada stood up and he roared, it's Krishna! Yes, it's Krishna. Krishna says, surrender to me. Right. Why is this rascal not accepting Krishna? The whole Bhagavad Gita, all that Prabhupada laundry cut and smashed and he, it's Krishna. Why don't you see Krishna? Mame Kamsha, surrender to Krishna. And they were just stunned. It was like the whole little storefront was just... They weren't laughing. They weren't laughing at all. They weren't laughing. Now we are laughing, but they weren't laughing at all. And they went back. Something hit them. They'd been in this Mayavadi fog. Even they'd been with listening to Swamiji for so many days and weeks and months. But still they hadn't heard what he'd said every moment. It's Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You have to surrender to him. They hadn't heard it because it entered their ears and got dissolved in the impersonal LSD hashish fog that was permeating their consciousness, and Prabhupada just cut through. Prabhupada was upset. He was really upset. I mean, what does it matter? Three or four hippies stoned most of the time, reading some books. Prabhupada was extremely upset that these jivas, what the hell is some stupid hippies, why should Prabhupada care about them? But he cared. He was really upset that anyone could not accept Krishna, and they would reinterpret Bhagavad Gita. So what was the point I was making? Anyway, the next morning Prabhupada said, we are declaring war on Maya. They came back again. You see, they might not have come back. It might have been that they felt so insulted that they didn't come back. Of course, there was chapatis, which they didn't get. They were going to come back. At least for the chapatis. But Prabhupada, for him, discussion of Mayavad, it wasn't like some kind of philosophical hobby. He really cared. Human, superhuman. He cared. Just we say human, someone's very human because they deal nicely and they care for you, but that has its limits. Srila Prabhupada's, there was no limit to the human compassion has its limits. How much do you care for someone? How much do you care? And then how many people can you care for? Just like you may have a feeling of affection for your own relatives, but then you don't care for anyone else. But Srila Prabhupada actually cared for everyone. So, human in the sense that, he had emotions, feelings, likes, dislikes, and he expressed them. He wasn't afraid to. He wasn't in a wooden box, stereotypical description. Now I'm a guru. Now I should do this. Or now I'm a devotee. What am I supposed to do? Look it up in the book. Srila Prabhupada was fully Krishna conscious. And the best of all people, because he was fully Krishna conscious. And from our perspective, that might be seen as very human, having very human-like qualities. But it's like Krishna, in the sense that Krishna, he appears to be human-like, but then he doesn't have envy or exploitive spirit. When Krishna is human, or he appears to be human, he is human in the very best of ways, not with any bad qualities. So Srila Prabhupada is human, but we shouldn't misunderstand that to mean that he's a conditioned soul. Four defects of the conditioned soul. Brahma Pramad Vipralipsa Karana Partav Arsha Vigya Vake Nahido Shesha. Mistakes, illusion, cheating, and imperfect senses. These defects are not found in the words of perfect persons. So Srila Prabhupada was human, but not in the sense of being defective. He didn't have human defects. He was not otherworldly. That's an English term which means like to have your, you're just like in some kind of a dream. Don't relate to this world at all. Srila Prabhupada is very practical and down to earth in many ways. He wasn't doing a guru show, just kind of floating, holding a flower, smiling. Very nice. Everything is very nice. Prabhupada wasn't like that. Human in the sense, Atma Upamena Sarva Samam Pashati Yojana. That scene, Sukham Vaya Diva Dukam Sayogi Paramomataha. Krishna describes the best yogi as one who, by considering his own situation, he feels for others. If he sees someone is suffering things, yeah, I've also been in that kind of situation, or I could be. So he feels for them. He feels of the sufferings and the pleasures of others as being of himself. However, now we come to the polemic part that I was talking about. To make it less polemic, I'll state it in the kind of terms that you're supposed to do so, as if you're putting forward an opinion. It appears that Srila Prabhupada is being reinvented as some kind, like the smiling Buddha or something, or like the Dalai Lama, that kind of, you know, Dalai Lama always smiling and nice in between eating his meat. All smiles, but no real oomph in him. No fire, no substance. So Prabhupada is fiery. Like I said, there's awe and reverence from Prabhupada, the devotees, because Prabhupada was very strong and very heavy. We saw the lecture this morning of Prabhupada using the word rascal. It was one of the most common words that Prabhupada used. There you go. I was going to say, whenever I say the word rascal, everyone starts laughing. Because nowadays we think it's a joke. Prabhupada didn't think it was a joke. He used the word all the time. And we don't know. We used to, because we used to try to model ourselves on Prabhupada. Now we don't. It's like not part of the ISKCON vocabulary anymore. Why is that? Do we have a better idea? Well, maybe we became all like Dalai Lamas or something. Just be nice and good and smile at everyone. But Prabhupada is very clear. We saw in the lecture this morning, Prabhupada was using the word rascal. He wasn't using it to... In the context that Prabhupada was using it this morning, it wasn't to describe like mass murderers, serial killers, rapists. It was just to describe what we might call ordinary people of this world who have no sense of the need for self-realization. Just ordinary people. These rascals, they're identifying with the body. So, Srila Prabhupada was like that. He was very strong. He used strong words pretty much all the time. It's very much part of his vocabulary. And we may think, well, that's very heavy, but it's true. Prabhupada was speaking the truth. Naturally. Just like he would say, this is a piece of paper. Like the characteristic is very clear that it's a piece of paper, right? You don't have to do deep scientific research. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada would see the ordinary person who we think is a very nice, ordinary, respectable citizen and consider a rascal. Because if we see the description, avajananti mangurha manushin tanamashritam. What's the next? No, I'm saying the wrong verse. Namandushkritiro murha. Prapadyante naradhama maya parita jnana asuram bhavamashrita. So persons who don't surrender to Krishna, they may be nice in the estimation of the world, but they're either well, they're all dushkriti, which means rascal. Fools, they're either fools, lowest among mankind, apparently very educated, but actually their knowledge is stolen by They don't really know anything. And simply out and out demons. So these are the four basic classes of rascals mentioned by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. So we often hear nowadays about Srila Prabhupada's compassion and his kindness, and examples are given, but that's true. He was. There are so many instances in New Vrindavan. And one autumn evening, it was a little cool, and he saw one of his female disciples without any warm clothing, and he told the temple president, why did she have any warm clothes? It's your duty to give warm clothes. So that's an instance of Srila Prabhupada looking after his disciples and even their bodily needs. But he also showed his compassion, for instance, by shaking the storefront and yelling at Wally, Keith, and Howard. That is no less a manifestation, maybe more a manifestation of his compassion, that he hated to see them being envious of Krishna. They didn't even know, they weren't deliberately being envious of Krishna. I mean, because they hadn't accepted the message of Bhagavad Gita as it is, they were envious of Krishna. So Prabhupada very compassionately cut through their illusion by yelling at them and pointing out how all the Keith had given a whole list of different Mayavadi. He was very learned, it seems. Quotes from all these different Chinese and Indian and Western mystics. And Prabhupada, by yelling at them, it's Krishna. He threw in the trash bin, or the rascal bin, all the persons who Keith and Howard and Wally had, they thought these people, they got something pretty good, you know. And they all say the same. I've had that experience myself also. I was giving a lecture once in Vishakhapatnam in India, and at the end one young girl came up and said that, well, why do you say only Krishna? Because I come to all the lectures here, so many Swamis come, and they all say the same thing, which is different to what you were saying. They say that everything is all the same, and all is one, and all the gods are the same. So how are you saying something different? So it may seem that, wait a minute, what's going on here? Everyone says the same thing. Keith gave a long list, gave a whole spiel of how all these different people are all saying that it's all one and light and everything merging and they're all different gods. And you feel yourself to be one with everything. And Prabhupada was furious. They're all rascals. All rascals. It seems like they're saying something very good. But they're actually demons who are misleading everyone. So, Prabhupada's compassion. That was his... That's how Srila Prabhupada himself defined his compassion. I mean, his compassion, obviously, it's oceanic. There's in every aspect, everything Prabhupada did, his compassion was manifest. But Srila Prabhupada defined his compassion as nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatadeshatai. In the pranam mantra, which he composed for himself, his disciples being so incapable at that time of doing so. Srila Prabhupada, of course, there's someone else's claim to have composed that, but chronologically, we from the description, we can understand it's a bluff. He didn't. Prabhupada himself composed it. So he himself defined his compassion in terms of the essential quality of it as delivering the Western countries from voidism and impersonalism. So, like I say, there's an attempt to reinvent Prabhupada. It's not surprising. It happens with all spiritual leaders. Because the thing is that it happens with the Vedas. Everyone in this world wants sense gratification. At the same time, they want to feel that they're very spiritual. and they're very good. So they take the message of Shastra or of the Acharyas and just adjust it a little bit. Just like in ISKCON, we say time, place and circumstance. This is used to, these three words are used to substantiate all kinds of nonsense. It's not meant for that, but it is. So, like that, just like, for instance, Buddha. We're not followers of Buddha. Well, we are, actually, in the real sense. Buddha means the enlightened one, the intelligent one. So the real Buddha is Krishna. Prabhupada is the real Buddha. But anyway, Gautam Buddha, who the followers of the so-called Buddhist religion, or whatever you want to call it, most of them are the traditional Buddhists in countries like Thailand, Malaysia, Sri Lanka. They're meat eaters. Whereas Lord Buddha, in his teachings, Ahimsa Paramo Dharma, the topmost religion is non-violence. So a good Buddhist will never kill any animal, but fortunately, in these countries, there are Muslims also who operate as butchers, so you can buy meat from them and still be a Buddhist. Isn't it hypocrisy? So this is just an example how Buddha has been reinvented. His teachings have been twisted so you can feel, I'm getting the blessings of Buddha. And I'm following his instructions. I never kill an animal. No way, I'm a Buddhist. How can you dream? How could you suggest that I would kill an animal? But, and what's for lunch today? A roast rat. Or snake. In Thailand, they eat all kinds of things. Pig, mostly, but sometimes rats and snakes and grasshoppers and all kinds of things. Anyway, they're no vegetarians. They're difficult to find one. So this is just an example of how people come to this, great teachers come to this world and they get reinterpreted. So, in my opinion, as we're supposed to say when we're introducing such things, the same thing is, same tendency is that in relationship to Srila Prabhupada, there was just one magazine I saw with some quote from Prabhupada, and there was a drawing of Prabhupada with his head down like this. And I mean, there are some photos of Prabhupada like that, but not many. But somehow those seem to be more popular. And Prabhupada looks very withdrawn and saintly according to the stereotype, the general stereotype, the Mayavadi stereotype, that they're just, you know, very soft and gentle. But actually, like I said, Prabhupada was very, you see almost all of photos of Prabhupada. He was very alert and involved in the world. It wasn't that he was just floating in some cloud of nebulous so-called spirituality. He very clearly defined what spirituality is. He didn't even hardly use the word spirituality, this popular word which people think, just you feel spiritual. Prabhupada is very clear. Surrender to Krishna. That was Prabhupada's spirituality. So, I'm now going to quote from one of my godbrothers. I won't mention his name because it gets a bit much. Srila Prabhupada spoke very strongly against modern politicians, priests, and, quote, so-called scientists and scholars, unquote. Yet often when he met them, he spoke in a respectful, diplomatic way, encouraging them to consider and enact Krishna consciousness. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada often stated that women were less intelligent, but when faced with discouraged female disciples, he assured them that devotee women were most intelligent. So in other words, Srila Prabhupada spoke strongly, but in his personal dealings, he was very considerate and like that. So, this is the comment of one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples about Srila Prabhupada. Now, another of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, in this regard, quoted another of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, whose name I'll mention, Sadaputta Prabhu. That Sadaputta Prabhu, he sometimes introduced scientists by background. Sadaputta Prabhu would introduce scientists to Prabhupada, and he said whenever he introduced a biologist to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada would shake his head and say softly, he didn't shout at the biologist, he would say, "Poor frogs." So he softly needled them. Yeah, that's the. You have that term in your language, needle someone. It means if you prick someone with a needle, it's not like hitting them on the head with a hammer. It's a prick. It doesn't totally devastate you, but it's painful enough to know that there's. If someone's sticking a needle in you, you know that they're not. Of course, if a doctor does that, you're supposed to think that they're injecting something which is good for me. At least that's what the doctors would have you believe. Or sometimes people do it to themselves, right? Maybe some of us in this room used to do it. Yeah. Don't we know? If we were to do an accurate biography of all the gurus in ISKCON, we might be surprised. I know at least some who told me. I never stuck needles in my stomach, only pills. So anyway, back to the poor frogs. The poor frogs. So the biologists would understand what Prabhupada was talking about. He was talking about the practice of dissecting frogs in the biology classes, and the visiting professors would become ashamed and apologetic. From there onwards in the conversation, Srila Prabhupada would let them have it. You know what that means, let them have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it means let. You know, this is supposed to indicate it means like being shot with a machine gun. There is the taped conversation of Prabhupada laying into, these are all English idiomatic terms, laying into, that laying into means laying into an assembly of professors in his garden in LA. He jokes afterward with Dr. Stilson Judah about how I called them all rascals and they took it. So, yeah. Prabhupada was very strong. Very, very strong. He wasn't like that. We sometimes like to emphasize how he was compassionate in the sense of putting clothes on his disciples, but he was also compassionate in removing their coverings of ignorance in various ways. So, it seems to be for some disciples and grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they seem to find themselves in a dilemma. That some of the things that the disciples feel to be true, they feel it doesn't fit with what Prabhupada said. So what do you do in that case? Just like, for instance, some may feel that the descriptions in the Bhagavatam, which Srila Prabhupada stood by, he didn't say these are allegorical or outdated, modern science has proved them to be wrong. Prabhupada, he not only Prabhupada wasn't shy about it. He wasn't saying, well, you know, that's stated, but, you know, actually, let's go on to the next topic. Prabhupada wasn't like that. He said, build a planetarium in Mayapur so that all the people of the world can come and see how the Bhagavatam is right and modern science is wrong. That was Prabhupada's presentation of the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. But some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples feel queasy about that. Queasy means when you have an uncomfortable feeling in your stomach. How can we present this to the people of the world? And of course, if we start to think about what the people in the world in general think, and if we want to say that, well, Prabhupada, you know, maybe he wasn't quite right on that one, or maybe you have to change it or adjust it, or maybe we should leave it out of the books. I was just thinking of a great way we could make Prabhupada's books much more available to the public. Feeling excited? We'll just leave out all the heavy and controversial stuff, and then the books will be reduced by about 90%. And then we can sell them for much less. And no one will get upset. And there won't be anything left. Because everything Prabhupada said, he gave Bhagavad Gita as it is. And Krishna's heavy. And the worldview that Prabhupada gives is opposite in practically every field to everything that modern man, human or inhuman, that they stand for. In other words, Prabhupada, his teachings, the Vedic teachings, as they are, as it is a total challenge to the whole human non-civilization. And if we are to be followers of Prabhupada, we have to accept that. We can't de-Prabhupadize Prabhupada and if we want to reconvert him into something which we think is more socially acceptable, or something that the scholars will accept. Damn it, they should accept Prabhupada. That's what they should be doing. Not that we have to readjust and reconvert Prabhupada so the people of the world will accept him. This is a very dangerous tendency. To accept Prabhupada means to be considered weird, odd. It's not socially acceptable if we actually state what Prabhupada's teachings are. And even within Islam today, if you state what Prabhupada's teachings are, it's not acceptable a lot of the time. I mean, if you want to state them all as they are, as Prabhupada stated, it's not politically correct within ISKCON today, just like this point. Women are less intelligent. How many times did Prabhupada say? Not Prabhupada said, only himself, but it's directly there in Shastra, but it's, you know, like the word rascal, it's something else which is edited out of. It's not to be spoken within ISKCON today. You could get in trouble with the powers that be. So it may be difficult for us to understand. Obviously, there are many women PhDs, so they're not unintelligent in that sense. Of course, anyone who's interested in getting a PhD, probably unintelligent, because they subscribe to the whole academic system. Of course, if you get a PhD for practicing, I mean, it may be done in Krishna's service also. But just to subscribe to that whole educational system, to be enamored by it, is in itself a sign of unintelligence. But then men do it also, so you can't blame only the women PhDs for being stupid. The men PhDs, they're also stupid. Very intelligently stupid. Stupid nevertheless. And just like, for instance, someone might spend their whole life studying, you know, different species of or the different species of toads, something like that. Toads, you know what a toad is? It's a frog. Almost a frog. Not quite a frog. If you want, you can go to the university and study the difference between a toad and a frog. I don't know what it is, actually, but some biological difference. Maybe they croak in a different way or something like that. I don't know. Interesting? Look it up in the encyclopedia, if you want. What are we to make of this? Well, I don't want to get into... I mean, that's like I say. I said it would be polemic, and there we are, folks. Bring out the rotten tomatoes. Don't throw them in the temple room. Wait till I go out of the temple room. I'm used to it. I've had many years' experience. Not actual tomatoes, but verbal ones. So a faithful disciple doesn't edit or try to readjust what he hears from his spiritual master, but he tries to understand. If he has difficulty understanding it, then he has to try to understand how it is correct. If he thinks, well, he got it wrong, then we're not a disciple. Just like we find Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna was speaking to him and Arjuna couldn't get the point. It took Arjuna a few chapters of Bhagavad Gita to get the point. After Krishna has described how work and non-work, and karma, akarma, and Arjuna says, yeah, that's okay, but what about, you're telling me that akarma, non-work, is better than work, but then why are you asking me to engage in the fight? And Krishna already explained it, but Arjuna didn't get it. He didn't understand the point. So then Krishna explained it more. And then even we find it in the last chapter, Arjuna is still asking more or less the same question about, well, what is sannyas and what is tyag? And it seems really difficult for Arjuna to get it. But he didn't say that, look, Krishna, you're just engaging in word jugglery. Just tell me you want to fight. If you want me to fight, that's all. And, you know, forget all this philosophy. I don't accept your philosophy, but if you want me to fight, I will. He could have said that. Or we could have said that, look, I don't agree with what you're saying, and, you know, I did say that I surrendered to you as a guru, but now I renege on that, and I'm going to find a guru who holds a flower and smiles and tells me not to fight. But Krishna... Krishna wasn't that kind of guru who spoke falsity to Arjuna. He spoke the truth, even though it was difficult for Arjuna to accept it. Even though Arjuna accepted Krishna as his guru, it was difficult for Arjuna to accept it. He expressed that difficulty. How am I going to fight Bhishma and Drona? How am I going to fight them? Fight them! How can I fight them? I'm so grateful to everything they've done for me throughout my whole life. My whole life is practically I'm only living because of them, and literally because otherwise, if it wasn't for Bhishma, then already the Kauravas, by their tricks and their schemes, would have killed the Pandavas. If it wasn't for Bhishma, Vidura, these two, they were always protecting. And Drona, he taught the skills by which Arjuna became famous. Not Krishna. It wasn't Krishna who trained Arjuna in fighting. It was Drona and Arjuna became famous. Arjuna was famous as a great fighter. He wasn't famous as a great devotee of Krishna. Even now he's more famous as a great fighter than as a great devotee. Among devotees, we see him more as a devotee. But among the general populace who know the Mahabharata, they know him more as a great fighter. So where did he get all that from? From Drona. And Krishna's saying, go and fight. You have to go fight, attack and kill them. So Krishna knew that it was very difficult for Arjuna to accept this, but Arjuna said at the beginning, Shishya steham shad imam tvam prapannam. Now I accept you as guru. Bhishma is my guru. Guru nahatvan hi mahanubhava. He called them guru, Bhishma and Drona. He referred to them as guru. but he specifically surrendered to Krishna as his guru for giving Krishna the knowledge of dharma, of what to do in this dilemma. And Arjuna might not have been expecting a discourse on the nature of reality, but he got it. And at the end of that, he got it. And on the basis of that, Krishna, although he knew it was extremely difficult for Arjuna to fight with Bhishma and Drona and everyone else, it wasn't difficult for Arjuna to fight. If that for him was natural, he loved fighting. But to fight with these persons, that was very difficult. And that was only one of Arjuna's difficulties, because he thought that it was adharma to do so. And that for Arjuna, he couldn't act against the principles of dharma for so many reasons. Any one of the reasons that Arjuna gave made it very difficult for him to fight. But Krishna, he didn't relent. He didn't try to make it any easier or make some compromise or some halfway house. Or he gave Arjuna, these are the principles. Do you accept it? You can accept it or not. It's up to you. You choose. You approach me as guru. I gave you the principle. You take it or leave it. So Prabhupada did that also. And you can say by his human nature or his dealings with his disciples, he wasn't just laying some philosophical position on them, but he dealt with it in such a way that he induced them to surrender to Krishna. So, and by everything Prabhupada gave, very joyful process, chanting Hare Krishna, chapatis and everything else, he induced his disciples to surrender to Krishna. But the message was there. It's inseparable from Prabhupada. So it's just like Wally and Howard and Keith, they like the chapatis and they like the chanting and they like the Swami and they like the incense and they like the bells and they like the feeling of being spiritual, but Prabhupada wasn't going to let them get away with just, he wasn't content with just letting them take the things they liked. He gave them the point. Krishna, you have to surrender to Krishna, only to Krishna. And everything else, all your ideas, everything else you've got is wrong. Completely wrong. Throw it out. Absolutely wrong. You're completely an illusion. So this is, Srila Prabhupada was also very insistent. Human-like, we can say in his, often in his dealings, Srila Prabhupada, especially in the early days, he was like that, he was very personal, give and take in discussion. Give and take, more give, a lot of give. But he was actually, in many ways, you could say that Srila Prabhupada is very autocratic. Just like Krishna, Mame Kam Sharanam Braja, surrender to me only. So Srila Prabhupada took the, he wasn't a half guru by his mercy. He wasn't, I'm a guru, and would you mind bowing down? If you don't want, you don't have to, but you know, it does say in scripture, and I think it would be a good idea if you bowed down. Prabhupada expected his disciples to bow down, and just like that in Seattle,
I don't see why I have to bow down.
You will be forced to bow down. He treated his disciples as any real guru would expect. He expected them to surrender and accept what he said. At the same time, he didn't just tell them, as Krishna also to Arjuna, he didn't just tell him, look, this is the way it is, just accept it. But he explained everything to him. So Prabhupada was always explaining. But some things, just like the structure of the universe, Prabhupada expected his disciples to accept it. Just like that Purushottam, Prabhupada's servant, he left Prabhupada, and he said, I can't accept Prabhupada's statements about the moon, because Prabhupada was joking. They were watching the moon shot. That's one small step for man and one great step for mankind. It was shown on TV in 1960-something, 8 I think it was. I must say, I had it, somehow or other in my childhood even, I had enough sense that I wasn't interested in it. While practically everyone in England was watching it on TV, I wasn't bothered. All glories to me. I guess I was more interested in other stupid things instead of that stupid thing. But anyway, Prabhupada was watching it, and I was in England, and Prabhupada was in England at the time. I was so unfortunate, I never heard of him. At the time, I'd have been 11 years old, if it was 68. I think it was 68. So Prabhupada was watching it and laughing, saying it's all a bluff. Isn't that amazing? I mean, the whole world, except Prabhupada and maybe a few scientists at NASA, they accepted that it was... and a few, you know, film technicians and this and that. They accepted it. Oh, this is, you know, this is historic in the history of the world. This is one small step for man and one great step for mankind. And, but Prabhupada was just laughing, saying it's all a bluff. And Purushottam, being, you know, saying, you know, this is America. This is our people. This is the... That statement, this is one small step for man and one great step for mankind, that was representative of everything that the whole bewildered Western civilization stood for. Because the whole Western civilization was going on the myth of progress. Now we can get into a whole big diversion here. How... From the time of Galileo, I guess, or the so-called Enlightenment, science became divorced from religion. We know better. The scientists know better. You see? The priests say that the sun goes round the earth, but Galileo has proved that the earth goes round the sun. So that was it. That was the beginning of the end of the priestly hegemony over human thought. And gradually the scientists discovered so many things, and the Bible got thrown in the dustbin of all the scientists. And with Darwin's Origin of Species, and then shown evolution, and man is the life has come from matter. There's no God. There's no need of God. Darwin has proved there's no need of God. Darwin has proved. You can go and visit Darwin. He's in Westminster Abbey, buried there. Interesting. Got buried in the church. The most prestigious church in Britain. I wonder why. Anyway, that's another topic. I won't get on that tangent. So anyway, Darwin proved that life has arisen by chance from matter. Well, he and gradually the species have evolved, and the human is the Homo sapiens. Now we are sapient. We're not just erect, Homo erectus, but we're also sapient. We have good brains by which we can understand how we have evolved from Homo this and Homo that. Now we became homosexuals. This is the ultimate in our sapience. And you see, and then there were different, there was humankind originated in Africa, right? Because they came from monkeys. They didn't descend from Indian monkeys, they descended from African monkeys. And then these African monkeys became Negroes, but anyway, fortunately they evolved further and became Americans. Americans means white Americans, like Buzz Aldrin, not black Americans. And they went to the moon, and that So like this, humankind is developing and we became more progressive. And America... Don't laugh so much. It's supposed to be advanced. Oh, he's a Czech, he's not an American. Oh, by the way, the Americans, they came from Britain. So I'm from Britain. Britain's the real thing. So just, but anyway, you know, the Americans, it's all right, we allow them to think that they're best. But actually, the real thing is British. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. The real American is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And those were the ones that went to the moon. Who was the other one? Neil Armstrong was one of them. Not the singer, but the some so-called astronaut. They were stuck in a TV studio for a few days. And who's the other one? Glenn? Buzz Aldrin, Glenn something or other. Anyway, they all had good Anglo-Saxon names. It's Glenn Muck something, so Scottish. But anyway, Scotland's next to England, and they've been conquered for enough years that we allow them to call themselves British also. So anyway, the ultimate perfection of beginning from the cell, which evolved into a tadpole or something, and then it became a fish, and then it became a lizard, and then it became a snake, and then it became a... Oh, wait a minute. It became a fish, and then it became a snake, and then it became a lizard, and then it became a monkey, and then it became a human being, and then it became Charles Darwin, and then it became Buzz Aldrin, and they went to the moon! And this is the perfection, this is the ultimate of human, this is the end of so much, in all our research in science, and we've proved that all men are equal, but Americans are more equal than others, and this is it. And Prabhupada was laughing, saying, these rascals, they never went anywhere. And who could accept it? Purushottam couldn't accept it. Because he thought, you know, how can he accept, you see, this? You know, Prabhupada's nice, but how can, is all of science, all of human civilization, the whole world is rejoicing, except the Russians, they weren't rejoicing, that man has gone to the moon. And Prabhupada's just saying it's not true. How can he be wrong? It was a great test, and Purushottam failed it. He didn't believe Prabhupada. He went away. Of course, there may have been so many material desires. When people go away for so many reasons that they give, but ultimately, we see the effect. They engage in sense gratification. So, ultimately, it's for sense gratification. So, anyway, Prabhupada's comment at the end of all was, I could understand why he might not believe me, but how could he disbelieve Shastra? That was Prabhupada's statement. So, Prabhupada, everything he's said was from Shastra. And everything, well, there were some things he didn't say. He expressed what you might call personal opinions. For instance, he's about subjects which were not Shastra. For instance, it was his opinion that Netaji Subhas Chandra Bose was the reason that the British quit India, not Gandhi's Quit India campaign. That was Prabhupada said, because when he saw the Indians were willing to fight, as long as Gandhi was doing his non-violence, the British could have continued. But when Subhas Chandra Bose organized the Indians to fight, then the British knew they were finished, because how many Indians were in the population of India at that time in 1945? It was probably, I don't know, 200 million. It's increased a lot since then. And the British, I don't think they ever had more than 20,000 people there. So how could they resist once the Indians started to fight against them in a unified way? So that, you could say, is Prabhupada's opinion. It's not backed by Shastra. But on other points, women are less intelligent, haven't been... They could not have been to the moon, because Shastra states that the moon is further away than the sun. Galileo was wrong, it seems. But on this and many other points, or several other points, it seems that Srila Prabhupada, some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they doubt that Prabhupada was right. So they want to contextualize or revise or say that Prabhupada's statements, or say that we can accept Prabhupada on certain things, but not on other things. Sometimes Prabhupada made mistakes, they will say. And in one sense we could say that is true. Srila Prabhupada made mistakes and he was prepared to rectify them. But that's the point. Brahma pramad vipralipsa karana patav arya vigya vake nahi doshesham. In the words or in the teachings of the self-realized persons, there are no mistakes, illusions, cheating propensity, or imperfect senses. These effects are not there. Why? Because they teach from Shastra. Shastra is perfect. So, just as it may have been difficult for Arjuna to accept Krishna, it may have been, or now we're seeing actually, that some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, and here I'm speaking broadly, it means others who are disciples of disciples. Now we have disciples of disciples of disciples also. They doubt what Prabhupada said. They may not even say that, or they may not say, well, I doubt what Prabhupada said, but they may try to contextualize or adjust it and redefine Prabhupada. Just like for instance, that many of our devotees in our movement today, they're not at all accustomed to even hear the words rascal, nonsense, fool, animal being used for normal people of the modern world. They're not used to hear this. That in itself means that our presentation of Krishna consciousness has significantly changed since the time when Prabhupada was present with us, because Prabhupada all the time used these words. His disciples picked these words up from him, and the understanding that went with them, and used them all the time. That was the vision that Prabhupada gave, which is the Shastric vision. Namang duskriti no mudha prapadyante naradhamaha maya parita jnana asaram bhavam ashritaha. That's one of the verses in Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna used the word mudha, and he used other duskriti, can be translated as rascal, means someone who performs sinful activities. There are many, Krishna used the word mudha several times in Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada often used these words to make it very clear that one who is not in Krishna consciousness is a fool and a rascal. It's not just name. You see, people, they may feel uncomfortable with this, because generally in polite dealings or in normal human society, you don't talk to people like that, or you don't even like to think about people like that. You don't start calling people fool and rascal. And actually Prabhupada, he didn't. Sometimes his disciples, the more fortunate or the close ones, he'd call them fool and rascal. But in his dealings with the public, like he may not have called them directly fool and rascal, but just like this poor frogs, he made them understand how they were a fool and a rascal. He may not have used the term directly, or he may have said that people who do not inquire about the absolute truth are fools and rascals. He may say that immediately, yeah, well, that refers to me, obviously. This is just one example of how we don't use these words nowadays, and in my opinion, I said it in my opinion, although Prabhupada didn't like us to say that, but in modern ISKCON we have to say that. Because otherwise you're called a fanatic. And that's what they say. You say, well, that was just his opinion. He said that, and someone else doesn't say that. And Anyway, I'm sitting here tonight, so I'll give my opinion. And you can throw it in the box with all the other opinions. That's the thing. That's what we think. Prabhupada has his opinion, someone else has his opinion, but Prabhupada didn't present it right now. It's fact. They are fools and rascals. We are fools and rascals if we don't accept that. So, just the fact that we don't use these terms regularly suggests that we feel uncomfortable with Srila Prabhupada and his use of, he'd regularly use these terms, but we don't like to do so. And we think, well, we should preach in a different way because people get upset. We have a better method of preaching. Whatever it is, whatever the reason may be, people may give different reasons. First of all, it's not even noticed. I don't find anyone, even no one even notices how this significant shift has taken place. Excuse me, in ISKCON. It's hardly even noticed. You'll find many Vyasa Puja offerings, and there are many very good realizations there, but we don't find Prabhupada glorified for this aspect of his compassion, which is, as Srila Prabhupada, as I pointed out, Prabhupada himself, he defined his compassion principally, not solely, but principally in terms of his Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarane, delivering the Western world from impersonalism and voidism. And of course, it wasn't only the Western world. In India also, there's so many incidents. One at a Gita Sammelan, a Gita meeting, I guess Sammelan means meeting. Then Prabhupada, with all these famous big swamis, and Prabhupada was just berating them all and telling all these big famous swamis, Prabhupada was shouting at them all, why are you cheating people in the name of Bhagavad Gita? So, we have to admit, if we even think about it, we have to admit that there is a significant shift in ISKCON today in that we don't use these words as we used to. And it's considered that maybe in the past we were fanatical. Maybe we were, but we were using the vocabulary and the preaching style that Srila Prabhupada himself used. And we had great faith in the veracity of that, and it appears that nowadays we have become more what we consider more saintly. But I reject that. I think it's, and to use Prabhupada's words, it's foolishness and rascaldom. No one will say that. Some people will, but most of us won't say that Prabhupada was wrong for doing that. They say, Prabhupada said that, but we shouldn't say that. But then Prabhupada never said that you shouldn't, that I can say it, but you shouldn't say it. He said, I said it, and you should say it. There is one incident where Prabhupada was in some personal exchange, was speaking strongly to one officer in an Indian consulate in New York, and then afterwards he said to one of his disciples who was there, that I can speak like that, but you cannot. But that was one incident in which he was speaking strongly to him in a personal way. But as far as preaching strongly, in this book, my memories of Srila Prabhupada, I've given over 100 quotes from Prabhupada about how Prabhupada is exhorting us to speak as he spoke strongly. So we can't deny that something has changed. That's changed. And we don't like to use these words. Often when I use these words in lectures, devotees start to laugh. I don't know why they laugh. Maybe they think I'm joking, or they think they didn't hear such words and they think it's just a joke. I don't know. I don't understand why they laugh. Because it's a very serious thing that we're Mudho mam na bijanati. The Mudha, the fools, don't know Krishna. Prabhupada's pointing out the fools and rascals. It's a very serious thing that we are fools and rascals. Or everyone who's not Krishna conscious is a fool and a rascal. It's a very serious thing because we're spoiling our human life. Prabhupada didn't say this. Sometimes he'd say it jokingly, but even then, Prabhupada's joke was, even his joking was full of import. It wasn't just flippant joking. So, there's that, and then on various issues, devotees, they like to think of, sometimes even people have come up with a theory that Prabhupada was a Bengali gentleman influenced by Victorian views. This is offensive to say this. We say Victorian, I mean in the Victorian era, that was the British, that means that more or less the second half of the 19th century. And in Britain at that time, it was the reign of Queen Victoria. So during that period, it was what would nowadays be considered very conservative social attitudes. Women dressed very what we would nowadays call stately. They didn't wear shorts. It's unimaginable. Unimaginable. Even two generations ago, I think in this country, it was unimaginable that even men would go around in shorts, just walking around. So anyway, they say, well, there was influence by that kind of. Those kind of attitudes came to be rejected during the 19th century, and very strongly so in the 1960s with the whole hippie era, where they completely threw it out and they brought in free sex and all this. So we may say that Prabhupada's influence, he had a British schooling, but actually it's not that Prabhupada was influenced by the Victorian conservative attitudes, but rather that those attitudes reflected those of actual human society as described in the Vedas. You get the point? It's not that Prabhupada was a product of British schooling. He himself describes how when the teachers in the class were describing about how reincarnation is wrong, Prabhupada, at that point, he didn't accept it. So it wasn't that he was just totally influenced by the British. So anyway, the question comes, what do we do when our views and desires don't fit the template of Srila Prabhupada's standards and words? Prabhupada said this, but we don't agree with it, we feel uncomfortable. What do we do? Well, we have a choice. We can change our views, which is what Srila Prabhupada was attempting to do, and saying that we don't know. We are fools. We are fools and rascals. We have to learn from him. That's the position Prabhupada took. I'm saying he's not a half guru, he was a full guru. You come and learn from me. Or another thing we can do is that we can say that, well, I'm following Prabhupada, but we just kind of change the template a little bit, do a little fiddling around. If you're a computer programmer, you can adjust the software so that the program works differently and you get a little bit different effect from that which was given by the person who, or the company that issues the software. You can adjust it. You can even be a hacker and introduce a virus so they completely mess up the whole software and it has quite a different result from when you use it from that which you'd hoped for. So that's why the system files in the computer, they say, they give you, when you start to enter them, they warn you, better you don't mess with these, just leave it alone. Unless you really know what you're doing, you better not tamper with it, better just leave it as it is. You don't understand it, something's wrong in your computer, don't go to the system files. Don't tamper with it, you'll make it worse because you don't know the principles on which the software runs. Find someone who knows, who can do the job for you. That's maybe not such a good example. It's somewhat of an example. But the point is that we should also know the principles. We should understand the underlying principles. But once we start to adjust our way of understanding Prabhupada, to the original way is this class is going on too long for those who want to go home. I have a long way to go. Shall I continue tomorrow?
Yeah.
I'm going to be here. I mean, if we go, I've got about 12 paragraphs here in my notes, and I'm only in the third one right now. So, what shall we do? Continue tomorrow, yeah. You want to finish tonight? There'll be another Janmashtami up to tomorrow's Sunday, right? So why don't you all come back again on Sunday? It's a free day for most people. No excuses. All right, we'll continue this tomorrow.
The online viewers want you to continue.
So what should they do?
But that's their opinion.
That's their opinion. We're just at the crucial point. What do we do when we find that our views don't... Everything I said up to now leads up to this question. What do we do? Well, that's a good point to leave it. Tune in tomorrow. That's what they do on the serials on TV, right? There's, someone's about to get stabbed to death, and then they say, and they cut it and say, "Come back tomorrow." And they think, "Oh, someone gets stabbed to death in every program. I won't bother to tune in. It has to be something more exciting." So yeah, I'm going to. Sorry for the online viewers. But I'll finish here for now. We'll continue tomorrow. Now, and now for something sweeter. It was just beginning to get a little harsh there. Something that the online viewers won't be able to get. They didn't make computer technology like that yet. Don't worry, Microsoft's working on it. Yeah, I'm now going to distribute Krishna Prem. I am going to give you Prem. Yamuna Jal, water from the river Yamuna.